Hey guys, welcome to Emotionally Immobile, where we learn to thrive and not just survive. I'm your host, Kayla.
And I'm Natalie. All right, today we're going to be talking about shame and the difference between shame versus guilt, how we include shame into our own self-narrative, as well as how oftentimes we use shame as a motivator and convince ourselves that somehow we're going to be able to use it in our journey to achieve wellness, when in reality, that is a big lie. So let's get into it. I know, Kayla, you were going to say something.
Sorry.
Your Peloton is alerting you.
It's alerting me that it's shaming me for not being on it.
Oh, Jesus.
No.
Peloton, that's the wrong thing. You should be motivating her to get on it, not shaming
exactly.
her.
Exactly. I was going to say, I believe we have a few listener questions on this topic.
Yes,
we did. So let's dive in.
One of our listeners, actually, which I just want to shout out, thank you so much for interacting with the Instagram stories. I am me, Natalie, if you can't tell the voices apart. I get so excited every single time you guys answer. So please reward me with your answers. I get so excited when I get those little bubbles that people are like, somebody responded to your thing. So I just want to say to the people that responded, I appreciate you. I see you. And we're going to reward you with some answers. So one of the questions that came through was around the topic of basically shame when it comes to past actions that we've done and past behaviors, past versions of ourselves when we were drinking. And as we're recovering, as whether we're in the midst of recovery or whether we're currently wearing that label of I'm sober, I am feeling confident about my recovery and my decision, no matter what, there's still going to be like inklings of shame that are going to come up when memories are triggered. So the listener asked, how do we move past that? And how do we deal with those sort of memories that continue, I think, to piece us apart from the person that we're becoming, and they pull us back into the past version of ourselves? So I don't know if you got thoughts on that. Okay, you can start. I got thoughts on this too. So take it away.
I think the first thing that stands out to me in this question, and this was actually something that was pointed out to me pretty recently, as in the last 6 months, because I was using the words guilt and shame interchangeably without realizing the impact and the true difference, because there is. And so I think when it comes to shame in general, but especially around the topic of the person that we used to be or the behavior that we used to have when we were drinking, and understanding that every day that we choose to be alcohol-free or we choose to be sober is a day that we're choosing not to have that behavior and not allowing it to define us. And so this is where we have to practice having a more growth mindset and understanding that it's okay to feel guilty or even embarrassed, I think is the word, about behavior or actions or things we said when we were under the influence, but understanding the difference between guilt and shame, which guilt says, wow, that was really embarrassing. I can't believe I did that. I really want to make sure that I don't do that again. Guilt being the motivator. I know for me personally, I'm embarrassed about a lot of things, I did when I was using. But I can laugh about it now too, which is such a gift in recovery. But it took me a while to get there. And it also took me understanding that I was not a bad person. I was someone who was struggling, who was using substances, who was making bad decisions. And those sometimes negatively impacted other people, which obviously can be selfish. It can be a lot of things. But it didn't define me as, oh, I am a bad person, which I think that's what guilt tells us. We are bad people, not that we did bad things. And so we have to separate ourselves from our behaviors and understanding you're not alcohol just because you drink it or whatever substances you've misused. Trying, and it takes time to get out of that fixed mindset but understanding and reaffirming every day, I am not my past. Today, I'm choosing to be the person that I want to be, and I get to take the actions that I want to. I am in control of my future and working on self-forgiveness. But I think the biggest thing to recognize is that it's okay to feel guilty, but not letting shame overtake us and then bring us back into that cycle. Cause I think that brings a lot of people out and back to drinking or back to using, because you just think about, oh my God, all the things that I did or said, and I'm just so embarrassed. I can't feel this way. And this is where you got to get uncomfortable and accept, oh, I did do those things. I did say those things, but the best apology is changed behavior. And the way you're going to do that is by staying sober and by doing things differently, not by continuing to try and push those feelings down and push away the guilt. This is where we have to accept the guilt, but not shame.
Yeah, no, I love that you brought up the concept of discriminating between those two things, because I think it's really important. And I think maybe the listener is dealing with feelings of shame, but I would actually encourage you to try and translate or transcribe that shame into maybe feelings of guilt, because it might actually allow you to figure out how to tangibly approach your guilt. Guilt is something that, shame is a story. And like I was talking about with this with Kayla earlier, like shame is a story we tell ourselves. And from a narrative kind of therapeutic standpoint, shame almost convinces us that our whole self is wrong. Everything that we did up until a certain point is definitive of who we are and who we're going to be. And it doesn't leave room for, you know, growth. It doesn't leave room for changed characters, for anything really, honestly, to happen. It just leaves you caged. And that's false. Like, we know that we need multiple aspects of information and data to make a conclusion about something. One thing does not define, it doesn't give definition to a characteristic or a conclusion, right? So shame is something where it basically leaves you no room for growth and it keeps you stuck. It is not a motivator. Guilt, on the other hand, guilt points to directly the behavior or an act or an experience that felt problematic and it felt maybe harmful or destructive, and that you feel some way about it, whether it is a negative feeling that you wish you would have changed when now that you have the hindsight 2020. So transcribing shame into guilt will allow you to actually be far more like oriented to action-based decisions. So if you think about a past where you're like, oh shit, I was this sort of person to this friend and I feel so ashamed, right? No, don't use that word. Don't use that narrative, because that immediately caps you, and it kneecaps you, honestly, truly, in the way that you narrate what you are possible of doing, right? You can say, I feel guilty that I put this person through that. All right, great. So what does this guilt motivate you to do? Does this mean that you're going to write this person a letter? Does this person maybe possibly even reach out and say, hey, I'm reflecting back about my past and I apologize genuinely and sincerely for putting you through this? Or maybe you feel sorry that you did something when you were drunk, like you stole something. Okay, maybe you're not going to go to the store and be like, hey, I stole this thing. Like, here's this thing back. But maybe you change that and you say, all right, I can't do that, but maybe I'm going to donate. Maybe I'm going to go volunteer my time. Make it into an action-oriented decision. Do not let your shame, and do not let shame be a barrier to your own growth, because you're already on this path to becoming a different person. And I don't want you, and I don't want anybody, honestly, to feel that their past is definitive of their future. It's not. We have zero idea what tomorrow is going to look like. Just because we've acted this way in the past does not mean it does not add up, and it does not necessarily have to correlate with how it is we're going to be in the future. Like, how we decide to be in the present matters, and it's more definitive how we're going to be in the future. So make the present choice, basically, to transcribe shame into guilt, and then use that as a motivation to whether it is go toward more acceptance or forgiveness, or you're going to go back and apologize to people that you've hurt or you're wronged, or maybe it's even shit, it's sitting down and saying, I'm sorry to myself that I put myself mm-hmm. through this. That there's an action even there that you can sit down and you can talk to your past self, this past version of you that exists within you, and have a conversation with that person and say, I'm really sorry that I exhausted you so much and that I didn't hear you and I wasn't there for you. And maybe I avoided asking you hard questions because it was much easier to escape and it was much easier to numb. So having that in our toolbox, I think, is really good. I think another thing that you mentioned, and I think it's really good to remind ourselves, is the concept of forgiveness. It's very hard for people and it's very hard for me. I'm not a person, that word just in and of itself, I'm like, ugh, when somebody wrongs me, I'm not a person that immediately goes, yes, I'm going to forgive you. Sure. No, because it makes me feel as if like I'm ignoring the aspects of the pain. And so I would encourage you that if you can't be forgiving toward yourself or toward another person, to harness the concept of neutrality. What does being neutral towards your past look like? Maybe you're not going to be forgiving. Maybe you're going to say, you know what? I have to hold myself accountable for these things that I did. Fine. That's great. Shows character. But being neutral towards yourself, you should allow yourself to feel a sense of some element, some aspect of peace, because I do think that's also an ingredient to growth. If you're constantly being angry about your past, I think you're always going to then have an anchor over there. And it's not going to necessarily allow you to move as fast in terms of just like your future and forward. What's the word? Failing forward, right? Like, it's not going to allow you to harness that concept. You're just going to constantly think it's a failure instead of a fail forward. Tangent done. Yeah.
I feel like when you said that too, it reminded me, for those of us that are perfectionists, and I feel like perfectionism, for me anyways, it rolls into probably why I'm not so easy to forgive. Mm-hmm. I feel, and I know this is not true, but some part of me, probably whatever, was conditioned to believe that it was a sign of weakness, or don't be a doormat, don't let people fuck you over. And if you're just so forgiving of everybody, then hey, they're just going to keep screwing you over. And then same thing goes for yourself too. And so I know I did this when I first got sober, and even more recently, is it's almost a form of like self-punishment when you don't forgive. Cause you, like you said, I have to hold myself accountable for the things that I did or the things that I said. And so I can't let myself off the hook, even if other people have forgiven me or moved on. But I feel like it's been shown and it's been proven that punishment is not necessarily the best solution when it comes to learning, especially definitely with kids, but I think with adults too. When you're the only one punishing yourself and everybody else is over it and you're not, like, you have to wonder what's going on. And I think this, you know, has, when I look at my past too, and people that I've hurt, and even people I've spoken to about things that I've done, and there's that element that feels like, am I ever going to get over what I did? Am I ever going to be able to accept that was me that did that action or that said that thing? But like you said, when you don't allow yourself to move forward, you're anchored in the past. And I think you begin to allow yourself to believe, once again, going back, that maybe that is true. And you're unable to fully heal because metaphorically, there's a little bit of a dam in your river that's always going to be there, never allowing the river to fully flow through and get where it needs to go, because you're always wedging something in there. And I feel like part of that is also us holding on to our past, possibly not grieving it. I know that even though I really didn't like the person that I was most of the time when I was using, there was another part of me that I really did like. The confident me, the extroverted me, the person that didn't have anxiety. So it was hard to have to completely let go of the idea of that entire version of me, because even though I wasn't a fan of 90% of her, there was 10% of her that I really did. And so I often wonder, and I think it's a good question to ask yourself, are you holding on to that 10% of you that you still miss or that you still haven't properly grieved? And if you are, I think Natalie has a really good suggestion for another kind of grounding writing technique. A journaling technique to talk to figure it out, because I can tell you, as somebody who's been in recovery for 6 years now, there's still a lot that I haven't let go of, and I'm working on it.
Yeah, but I mean, exactly. It's extremely hard. It's extremely hard. Yeah, if we're gonna be vulnerable, like, I remember there was one time. So I've been an insomniac my entire life, which a lot of it is rooted in anxiety and a nice little ruminating brain that never shuts the fuck up. But I remember a couple nights where it got really bad, and I needed to figure out how to get to bed. Like, I was trying to meet a need, a basic need. And I remember taking Ambien and taking a shot of alcohol at the same time, because I literally was like, I will do anything right now to be able to go to bed. And what I was craving was actually rooted in being able to be the person that people need from me tomorrow. It wasn't that I was actually trying to create something for myself that I was going to enjoy. I didn't enjoy doing that. I didn't enjoy seeing myself that I was in that much pain. But what I needed to do, and how I was phrasing it in my head, was like, I need to be this person for that whole group of people tomorrow. And I'm not going to be able to do that if I don't have rest, if I'm not in my headspace. And I reflect back on that, and I was like, fuck, so much of my action, so much of my pain that I put myself through was actually rooted in how I wanted to come across to other people. And so When you're looking at shameful, quote unquote, shameful behaviors, that's how you're narrating it. I want you to also take a look at how much of that was also rooted in being something for someone or for something, right? Like, when we make actions, a lot of our choices, and society does a really great job at convincing us that a lot of our actions need to be based in the benefit of somebody else. It's self-care is selfish. We hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. And then they say on the other flip side, they're like, yeah, no, self-care isn't selfish. But what the fuck? Like, you've taught us basically not to ever take time for ourselves. Of course, we're going to think that we're going to use something in order to be something or someone for another person. Like, that is a bridge. We use that as an ingredient also to be something for somebody. So I want you to not immediately align that action that you did with something that is reflective of your character, because actually in reality, if you tease that apart, that action was rooted in something that you were trying to actually be more like easier to be understood by other people. You were trying to be in a better headspace you were trying to be more fun, whatever it is, you were trying to do something that would be more efficient for another person. You were still others focused, even if it seems like you were doing something that was very selfish. That's a side note, but the technique that I have for you, and which I get it, therapists literally love journaling, don't hate on me. There's just something about putting pen to paper. But the idea really comes from the concept of when we have a thought in our head, it is so hard for us to analyze it because it's triggered by other thoughts. It can spiral. It can basically massage and mold itself into a whole different other monstrosity because we're not giving it like boundaries to exist in. Our head is free flowing. It's imaginative. It's creative. Like, one thought of I did this wrong can turn into I'm a loser, right? Like, very fast. So get that shameful thought onto paper and immediately allow all the other senses that you have to start analyzing this. Because the moment that we put it outside of ourselves, we give ourselves the tangibility to tease it apart. We can say, you know what? I'm reading this and this doesn't sound completely correct. Like, maybe I was a loser in that moment, but that doesn't mean that I'm a loser forever. So maybe let's rewrite this. I feel like I failed this person at this moment in time. That doesn't mean that you're a failure completely. It just means that maybe in that specific moment, you felt that's what you did. That's fine to say. That's again, translating that shame into guilt. And so it's a lot easier when you do it and you can see it and you can visually assess it rather than leaving it in your head and allowing it to marinate in the absolute chaos that is your mind, right? Because your mind is probably getting triggered by a whole bunch of other things at the same time. There's probably feelings that you haven't dealt with from yesterday. There's probably problems that you're dealing with simultaneously with your partner, with your friends, whatever. All of that anger, all of that emotion, whatever is going on, it's playing a role into how fast that thought can turn into almost an unimaginable or unmanageable thought. That's what I'm trying to say. A harder to manage thought. So put it out on paper, try to rewrite it into something that is more focused on like putting boundaries around it. So maybe time, place, the feeling in the moment, right? Put limited kind of boundaries around that. And then ask yourself, okay, what can I do about it? If you want to be solutions focused, then find a solution for this. What can you do that would make you feel a little bit better about what you've done? There's always room for growth, right? We like always try and have this sort of benefit of the doubt toward other people. Why can't we extend that toward ourselves? And for me, journaling allows me, it's a little bit easier for me to draw upon that sort of, you know what, I'm going to give myself the benefit of the doubt. Maybe I'm going to be able to change this. And then sometimes when I'm really mad about what I've written, I just burn safely. Let me put this in, I'm not a pyromaniac, but safely burn that piece of paper, rip it up, whatever you want to, just get it out of yourself, out of your vessel, out of your head, whatever it feels like that you're just allowing it to you're doing something about. Yeah, exactly. You have the power to destroy it. I like ripping paper. So you always find me writing thoughts and then ripping it. And then you find random pieces of paper in my house and they're like, what is that? I'm like, bad thoughts that are just currently gone. But yeah, that's a technique. I would say give it a go.
Yes. Ugh. Rumination in general is so unhealthy.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think it's also really good to think about, like, when you're ruminating about something, whether it's a fact or a feeling, we have to put that extra lens of like critical analysis and said, do I have enough data to basically support this statement as a fact, or is this merely a feeling? Because if it's a feeling, then feelings are visitors and they can come and they go. And we got to find then what triggered that feeling rather than thinking like, oh God, I'm going to, you know, basically convince myself in this moment that a feeling that I have is a fact that I need to believe.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
I think, and it's funny enough, it was something I read on Instagram, I think on another therapist's Instagram page.
Uh-huh.
But they were just, it was a reminder that, hey, just because you have a thought or you have a feeling, it doesn't make it a reality. And like you said, if you're feeling guilty, if you're feeling you're like you're spiraling, kind of whatever you need to do, go take a walk, practice movement, journaling, meditation, jump in a cold shower or a hot shower, whatever helps ground you back to the moment and recognize, hey, this is my anxiety running away with me right now. This doesn't necessarily, like you said, is this fact? Is this fiction? Because when I think about things I've done, I can be like, yeah, there's a lot of evidence here to actually say I was pretty shitty. But it's, once again, I had to practice a lot of acceptance. And I think that's something that some people need to do as well. In the sense, I don't believe I was ever a bad person. Like what you said, a lot of the things that I did because I was trying to survive, or yeah. I did, like you said, because I was trying to please somebody else. I was trying to fit in. I was trying to be a part of what was going on. I was trying to connect. But alas, many failed attempts over. And it's easy enough for people to say, why didn't you learn the first time? Or other people's idea of what's a rock bottom. And everybody's rock bottom looks different. Everybody's super guilty moment that they think, oh, wow, if I did that, I would definitely stop drinking afterwards. Everybody is different. And I really like the whole concept of rock bottom is where you stop digging, because you can always go deeper. It can always get worse. And I try and practice the non-judgment of others and go, because I've heard some really gnarly stuff people have done. And I've gone to a point where I'm like, okay, interesting. You learn to go, you know what? I don't know what was going on in that person's life or in that person's mind. But I know I've been in a really bad place in my mind. And even, and then you go back and I'm trying to think of some some examples. I have so many. Oh, I'll give one. So one thing I know we talked about briefly, right, around shame was like sex work.
Yeah.
Because we have somebody we want to bring on the podcast that we think is going to be a really rad guest in the future. But I just dropped slightly now. Oh, yeah, I did that for a little while. And she's like, wait, what? And it was something I held shame around for a while and then guilt. And now I don't care because it was just something that I did. I was young. And when I look at, for me, it was being a sugar baby, which I think pretty much everybody knows what that is. And you're young and you want nice things. And I was living in LA and I was like, how are all these girls around me who are my age, like able to afford all this stuff? How are they able to go out to all these places? And they're not working 2.5 jobs and I was still in school and it seemed an option. And so I did it and I didn't like the way it made me feel. And especially because I was in early sobriety too. So I was not able to just get drunk or get high and numb out. But I don't regret anything that I did either because it was a learning experience for me. And I have no judgment on people who do sex work or who do what they got to do to survive or to get through school or even just live their lives. Live the lifestyle you want to. And if that's what you got to do, do you. And I think for me, I held shame. Or what I thought was shame, which was guilt that other people were going to judge me for it. People wouldn't understand. They'd think that I was really self-centered or really vain or, you know, and in a sense, like I was very caught up. And so when I look at that past version of myself, which was not even that long ago, 5 years ago, I can go, you know what? I totally get it. Young, you're in your early 20s, you just want to fit in, you want to be part of this lifestyle, like you're excited, you're in early sobriety, or you're caught up, you're in the pink cloud. And here's this thing that other people that you know are doing that you think, okay, I'm going to do it too. And you get caught up. And so I think a lot of us get caught up in, oh, if everybody else is jumping off the bridge, are you going to? And you're like, maybe, like, where is this bridge? Are we jumping? Is it fun? And I think it's
okay. I have a fear of heights, so I would never jump off that bridge.
I'll pull you off.
But
I think it's okay to look back and go, you know what? I got caught up in the moment. Or you know what? I really, like you said, I was really trying to impress all these people around me. And when I looked back at like some Botox, some nice clothes, all this stuff that I didn't really need any of it. But I was now as an elder millennial, a couple years later, I can realize, okay, if I'm feeling insecure, if I'm feeling like I'm not where I want to be, or the people around me are making me feel bad about myself because I'm not wearing the latest this, or then I reevaluate like who I'm around, or I reevaluate what I'm doing. And I'm usually probably like I'm way too on social media. I need to unfollow people that are making me feel bad about myself. Because that was the first and the last time I ever got filler. Because I was like, it's so easy to get caught up no matter where you are. And of course, if I was literally in LA, like it's probably one of the worst places to be. But you can get caught up in any town trying to keep up with the Joneses, trying to be Martha down the street who has her nice Lexus and little family and she gets whatever. We hate her, but we want to be her.
Martha, you bitch.
Yeah. And we get caught up and we do things to be like Martha or to be friends with Martha. And then we end up feeling bad about it later because it's not who we really are. And I think once again, this is where we practice that acceptance and that forgiveness. And for me, it allows me to also be more compassionate and empathetic to people opening up, because I don't think if I didn't have that experience or any of my past experiences that I used to hold guilt or shame around, I would probably be judgmental of those people, of people who do that kind of work, of people who were addicts or alcoholics or anything like that. It's easy to judge what we don't understand. And so I'm honestly grateful now for all the different shoes that I've filled, because it allows me now to be much more understanding of every type of person. And if I don't understand a person, it's a good journaling opportunity, perhaps. It's a chance to reevaluate the situation and go, all right, what's going on with this person? What's bothering me about them? Like, why is this the shadow self? I know we had brought that up before. There's what's going on here. Why am I being judgmental? Why is this bothering me? Because it shouldn't. Nothing that anybody else does holds power over. You have the power.
Yeah. I have so many thoughts that I don't even know where to begin. Yeah, that you started with sex work, and now we're talking about acceptance and positive mindsets. I don't know where the fuck I should begin with this one. Sex work, again, to all our sex workers that are working, like, woohoo, get that bag, get that money, whatever it is. Yes. Like, again, this is something where you do things in your life in order to meet your needs. We're human first. And that's the way that I'm going to always approach individuals is no matter whatever you do does not define you. You are a human first. And you're trying to most likely than not, you're trying to meet your needs, whether they be basic or whether that they be just idealistic needs or whatever it is. But yeah, I never judged you, Kay, when you said that. I was like, she did what she had to do. She literally, in a lot of that, I think that another thing, like when Killa told me that was something that was part of her story, immediately my first thought was context. I need to know the context. Like, I didn't judge that was something that, like, I didn't judge the content because I didn't understand the context. And I think that to me is probably like the most important thing when somebody is speaking to you is not to immediately just take whatever it is that they're saying and say, oh, that's the story. Like, bullshit. You don't know the strings that are attached to that story. You don't know the roots that was, you know, below that, beneath the surface. You have zero idea of what really made up that decision. And the context there is, you got caught up in an environment that almost in a way, it was an act of self-abandonment. And I know I've spoken about that because now you have this sort of like version of yourself that you're very comfortable with. And you look back to that time in your life where you were doing that. And again, with neutrality and acceptance and understanding, but you look at that and you almost feel pain for what that person put themselves through in order to acquire a certain status, a certain label, a certain feeling, really. We were almost like comfortable with the uncomfortable. And I think that's like the part that was... that's the context that we actually need to really pay attention to, not what we were doing outwardly or extrinsically or what people can see, but really the story beneath that story, the stuff that's in between the lines. That's what we need to understand. And I think that's where the acceptance comes in. It's not acceptance of that specific thing that person did. It's acceptance of the context of what could have caused that person to make that decision. And that's just radical empathy. I just think that's something where we all have to get better at. Okay, so that's that point that I wanted to say. Then the addressing the point of the whole concept of just acceptance and a mindset of like when shame comes up, a lot of the time I try and think of it as when a bad feeling comes up or a bad thought comes up, I don't look at the thought itself. And I know I catch myself. I'm not perfect and I definitely can let a negative thought spiral. So by no means, listeners, I'm not yet trained in how to do this completely 100%. This is still a learning process, even for me, being a person that's working in therapy with clients every single day. It's still hard to practice what you preach. There's a different, a friend of mine literally spoke about this and she's like, it's a different experience to talk about things rather than actually do them. And I don't know, it was such a radical moment for me. I was like, oh my God, yeah, that is 100%. I can talk about things and I can feel very certain about them, but to do them, it takes a completely different amount of like skill set. But back to the point, when a negative thought comes up, I think for me, I look at it from a perspective and I try to look at it from a perspective of what is it trying to communicate to me? What is the need behind this negative thought? Like maybe this thought came up because I felt misunderstood throughout the day. Maybe I didn't feel considered throughout the day. Maybe I feel inadequate. And this thought, this memory or whatever it might have been from our past came up because of a feeling that actually occurred in our present moment. And then a past memory that is similar to it pops up. And then we're stuck dealing with the past and the present and thinking about the future. And then we just feel like we're all fucked. So instead of immediately judging the negative emotion, I would stop and say, almost like there's something important here. There's something that I have to otherwise I wouldn't be feeling this negative emotion. Like, it's actually trying to tell me something, that a core need of mine isn't being met and that I might be dismissing, because it is very hard to meet our needs while also being in reality and managing how, like, being a human on an everyday basis. Let's not add in also the layers of who you are to other people and the roles that you play. Like, I'm not even going to touch that shit. Like, it is hard to meet our needs when there are competing needs around us. And so a negative thought might just be actually a moment for you to just harness a little bit of time and space for you to say, what is this trying to tell me that I actually might be dismissing? Yeah.
So true. Yeah.
It is. Speaking truth over here.
And I don't know how we didn't bring this up before, but what you said just reminded me of something that I think so many of us go through right in the beginning of our sobriety journey, which is coming out as being sober. And it seems really easy from the outside perspective when you, like, are on sober social media, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and people are so, especially young people, are so open about it. And then you, if you're someone who's not in that place yet where you haven't told a lot of people about your journey, maybe you haven't told anybody, and you're sure as fuck not ready to go and put it in your Instagram bio. And if it's this, like, weird place to be, because it feels like your entire lifestyle and life is changing, and it is in a way, right? Not everything's going to change, but a lot is going to change. And because of the stigma around substance abuse and alcohol abuse, we're still in a place which boggles my mind, but things are definitely changing at a very fast pace, that in 2022, we're still having to give people advice on, if you're not comfortable telling people you don't drink, say you're on antibiotics, say you have to get up early in the morning, say you're driving. There's all these things.
Say you're getting filler. If that's your thing.
Sorry, I just got Botox. I can't, like, just make something up. And it could totally be true. These are all things that, like, legit you can't drink. You know, that's why I would say the antibiotic one, everybody knows.
Don't touch me. I'm on meds.
Definitely drank on antibiotics. And so some of us don't care. It's still shitty that for a lot of us that we have to think that way. It's that whole idea of, like, why is alcohol the only drug you have to explain why you're not doing? Nobody's asking you, like, hey, like, you're not shooting dope. What's up with that?
Nobody can imagine somebody like, why aren't you doing meth? What's wrong with that?
And unless you're in a meth house, then maybe. But even then. So we have to navigate, and it feels strange because and it's all this, like, preconceived ideas of, everyone's going to judge me now that I'm sober. People are going to think I'm boring. It's all this bullshit that on both sides, like, sober people, we think it and then we believe it into existence when it's not true. And then people who drink, who judge sober people, it's all the same. Like, sober people are boring. Wow, like, you must be fun at parties. And it's a projection, first of all. So, and I've said this before in past podcast episodes of The Dry Life, and I'll bring it here too, which is, almost nobody gives a shit that you're not drinking. Like, it's very much the spotlight effect. And I don't say this in a negative way. Nobody cares what you're doing, but it's very much, pretty much everybody is very self-conscious. And so most of the reasons people are at that party or at that bar, at that restaurant, wherever you are drinking, is because they have social anxiety too. They need a little bit of that liquid courage to loosen up and feel like they're part of what's going on. And first of all, now there's, like, mocktails, there's any beers, most places that you can order. So people don't even ask if you have something in your hand. And then if they do, I'll tell you, it's been 6 years and I have only ever gotten one person in 6 years who has said something negative, who was like, oh, you don't drink, that's weird. And I didn't even know her. So I was like, all right, bitch, cool. Yeah. And then I moved on. But it's like you said, you gotta think, okay, why am I afraid to tell people that I'm not drinking anymore? Am I afraid of judgment? Am I afraid they're gonna think X, Y, Z? And these are all things you can take mental note of or write down and worry, like, what are my fears? And then what are facts? Like, in reality, are my friends all going to drop me? No. Am all of a sudden?
They do. Bye. Like,
and if
about
they
last
do,
episode.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And you have your real friends, and you have your real connections, and then you have your supporting cast of people are happy to get drunk with you. They're happy to, what's the word that I'm looking for? Encourage your bad behavior, right? They benefit from your lack of boundaries.
Yeah.
So you fade away or you stop hanging out with them when you're no longer drinking. But this is good for both parties, right? They think you're boring and they're totally bad influences. So that's a cord that needs to be cut. Bye, bye, bye. And the other thing that I just wanted to say around it is just recognizing that first time you finally just start saying, yeah, I don't drink. Like, you don't have to go into it. Like, you don't need to go into the room and announce to everybody, hello, this is how many days alcohol free I am. I was suffering from an alcohol use disorder and now I am not. And you know what? If you want to, you can. But I found that I pretty much, nobody asks. And then occasionally people will, new people that don't know that I don't drink. And I just say, yeah, I actually don't drink. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And then I get a lot of, oh yeah, I don't drink that much anymore. It's funny how people are usually, especially I think young people, if you're a young person, because it's so expected of us to be into that culture, or then people you've known for a long time who all of a sudden you're not drinking. And right on the subject, if you have done some things in the past that you're not super proud of, then they're going to be rooting for you. I've had so many people in my life come up and tell me, yeah, I got sober. Yeah, I don't do this anymore. And I'm like, dude, that's so rad. Like, good for you. And so this is where we have to like shift that negative, like it's going to be negative. It's like, have a think about the positives, like all the positives, all the people that are going to support you, all the people that are going to say, hey, good for you. That's amazing. And then opening up that book for, you don't even know if somebody else who's there could be struggling, and you saying, yeah, I don't drink anymore. And then that gives them an opening. I've also had a lot of people come to me privately, obviously, and ask about sobriety or ask about Reframe or 1,000 Hours Dry or just anything in general. And it's really cool to know that even if they're not ready to take that step yet, I am somebody that they know that they can come to and feel safe in that subject, because not everybody knows somebody who's sober in their life. Yeah. And so even if you're not like super close, even if you're an acquaintance, you could peek that person, you could plant the seed for that person. And that is so rad.
Yeah, that was actually, ironic enough, that was actually the other question that we got, which was the labels and the shame that is occasionally associated with labeling yourself as sober or in sobriety or whatever it is. There's so many labels out there, alcohol free, you can go on and on. To me, I try to really honestly stay away from labels. Yeah. Labels cage our human existence. They, like, we are constantly evolving. The person that I'm going to be tomorrow is going to be different than the person that I am today. And I know that sounds existential, but bear with me. There are things you have zero understanding of that are going to happen in your day. Like, 2 hours from now, you might actually see a massive car crash on the road, and it might just completely startle you to the point where then you think about the fragility of life and you start trying to live your life differently. Like, you have no idea what is going to happen within the next few hours, the days, whatever. And so I stay away from labels. I make it efficient for a person to understand if they're like, oh, are you going to want something to drink? And I say, no, like, I'm sober. I don't drink. But then there are other times where I just say, no, I'm not feeling really like drinking. And that's my story. That's the story that they usually know me for. Not, oh, she's the sober chick that is, we can't invite her to barbecues because she's going to be boring. Honestly, first and foremost, I am a hoot, and everybody can say that about me. I just want to say that. I am fun and I bring the fun. So I don't think any of my friends would really say that about me, that I would be boring. And I feel like sobriety, honestly.
Stop till Nat walks in.
Hell yes, the party doesn't start till I'm there. But like, in reality though, really, like, being fun while being sober, and I've talked about this before, to me, I don't know, it's such an interesting experience of being able to remember how much joy you had and how much joy you were for another person and how much fun you brought and how, like, real you were. Like, I don't know. It is very radical to be real. I just, if anybody hasn't tried it, go to a party sober and honestly, like, just play a character of being like the fun girl. Pretend to be, if you want, pretend to be drunk, but pretend to be your drunk self and say the things that you would have said, like without the kind of things that you need liquid courage for, and say it like authentically and say it soberly and like literally allow yourself to just be free. Like, it's such a freeing experience. But to the question that the person asked, which is like, how do we deal with labels? I would talk more about like your story. One, because mm-hmm. people really identify with stories and they really love feeling. And I spoke about this actually earlier with a client of mine, that vulnerability is actually what I think breeds connection and breeds motivation to do something for ourselves rather than a success story. Like, success stories are great and say, oh yeah, I overcame this. But sometimes I think people look at that and they get intimidated by it and they're like, oh no, I can't do that. I don't have that sort of motivation. But when you share vulnerability and say, I don't drink anymore. And they say, oh, why? And they're like, yeah, it wasn't maybe like the healthiest thing that I did. And this allows me to be healthier. I think you allow yourself to step into your story, your narrative, your journey, and what's gotten you there. And it allows that person to, it opens up the space for them to say, oh, really? How has your life changed, like in healthier ways? Like, they become curious to your story and what kind of life you live right now, rather than immediately being like, I feel like when sometimes people say, oh, I'm sober, it stops the conversation instead of invites the other person to be curious as to like, why. I don't know why. That's been my experience. Maybe people have it differently. But I personally usually lean into a story. And there was one time where I was sitting at a restaurant and we had this really wonderful server. He was so nice. And he kept offering, because he knew that we were from, my partner and I were from Wisconsin, and obviously Wisconsin, like, they have a really good spotted cow beer, which still very tasty.
I thought you were going to say cheese.
Oh, hell no. Cheese is great, but no, they have a really good spotted cow beer, and that was a beer of choice for me. I remember we would get pitchers sometimes sitting at the Union and just like drinking it. It's a beer that's associated with some good memories, but he knew that. And he was like, oh, we got this beer. It's very similar. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, no, we're going to pass on that. And then he came around. He's like, are you sure? Cause like, it's really, really good. And that was a moment where I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to say my story. I'm going to be like, I believe you, but I actually, like, we both don't drink. Thanks so much for offering and trying to like give us this experience of that beer. I bet it's wonderful, but it's not something that we're going to take you up on. And it was a moment where I allowed the conversation to continue, because then I got the question of, oh, really? Cool. Okay. That's cool. Like, I have a non-alcoholic version. And I was like, oh, really? Awesome. Yeah, that would be great. I'd be interested in that. And they're like, yeah, we're actually really proud of it because it's very similar and it, you know, tastes just like, I was like, oh, sweet, great. We got into a completely different conversation topic. And then it also allowed that person to share something that they're like really proud of, which I guess wouldn't have come up if I wasn't radically honest about my journey or me and my partner's journey in that. So I think ultimately sharing your story is a little bit easier. And I don't mean go into the nitty gritty details, share as much as you're comfortable with, but you don't have to immediately just say, oh, I'm sober. That's it. No, you can just say, I'm choosing not to drink today. I'm going to go with the mocktail. I'm really excited about trying this. Or I'm a club soda and lime kind of girl. Like, that's my, you know, go-to. And I think more or less, the conversation can keep going. Like, it doesn't have to stop there. And for the people that are going to make problems out of your sobriety, that's more of a reflection of how they think about themselves actually being sober and what they think that they would be giving up and what they're uncomfortable with than actually something that they're like uncomfortable with you. You symbolize something to them that they're uncomfortable with, not you as a person, but what you represent. And if somebody does find that uncomfortable, I would just sit with that. And I would maybe even reflect upon, oh, that's really interesting that another person, that I represent this in another person. And how does it make me feel being uncomfortable to another person? Like, what I'm doing, like, how can I make that more of a comfortable experience for myself rather than immediately feeling like you're doing something wrong?
But yeah. I think it's a good opportunity to practice the radical empathy, because it makes me just remind yourself, like, when you're in active addiction or when you were drinking heavily, like, I'm sure that you had or ran into somebody that wasn't drinking and you were like, who the fuck is this? Or that's lame. Yeah. I remember a girl in my communications class at Tech who was sober, and she was like a couple years older than us. So obviously I'm sure she had left school, and like similar to my story later on, but I just remember her being, I remember just being like, whoa, she like is like totally sober. That's crazy. It intrigued me, honestly, because I knew that was probably going to be my journey eventually. But I think too, it's okay if you feel safe inside of a label. It can always change. And like Natalie said, there's so many different things. I personally just like to say that I'm a non-drinker. Sometimes I'll say sober too, because it's such a blanket statement, and people for the most part just understand, hey, sober means I don't drink, rather than having to explain, no, I don't drink alcohol. Or they usually get the hint if they're being pushy. If you just say, yeah, no, I'm sober. Fuck off. it's like a good way to
I'm going
to
come
it.
After you, bro.
But I'm an alcohol-free teetotaler, however you say it, will work for you. But I personally usually just stick with, yeah, I don't drink alcohol. A non-drinker. Like, that's how I, when you talk about identifying. But in the beginning of my journey, I identified as an alcoholic, and then I identified as a recovering alcoholic, and then I didn't identify as anything. And it also depends who I'm around too, because I tend to try, like if I go to an AA meeting for whatever reason, I'll be respectful of the space and I'll identify as a recovering alcoholic. But it doesn't bother me to do. So as long as you're not bothered and you don't feel obligated to take a label, then don't. And if you feel like you need to have one because it's going to help you, at least in the beginning of your journey, then find one that you feel good with and that you feel comfortable with, because the definition changes for everybody. Like, some people would consider me sober because I don't drink alcohol, but others wouldn't because I microdose and because I take SSRIs. So it depends on the person. It's all with a grain of salt. You just have to be honest with yourself and go, all right, what makes me comfortable? And then, keep practicing, because it gets easier with every person you tell and every situation that you're in, that you're open about it, and you get more and more positive feedback. It's just so confidence building and it's just reaffirming that you're on the right journey, because, and I think Natalie and I both had that experience of just lots of positive feedback. Lots of, oh, that's awesome. Lots of, oh, wow, like, I'm actually trying to get sober. There's so many people out there trying to change their relationship with alcohol. So you never know who you'll inspire, or, you know, who, like you said, who, if they're curious, it's very kismet. Maybe they met you for a reason. And so it's cool. Just, and you get to be yourself. And the more you get to be yourself and the more you get to live in your truth, the easier it gets and the less guilt you have and the less you get away from that. Because I find that when I just am honest every day and I live in my truth every day and I look back and I do a 10 step, which is something that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's, is there anything that I have to look back at on the day and apologize for? Is there anything that I did wrong? And I usually don't have to. There's not a lot for me to feel guilty for, because I do my best to just be honest and forthcoming in the beginning. And when you can learn how to do that, when you start to just be yourself, and once you figure out who that is too, it gets a whole lot easier. And then I think are less prone to doing things that you'll feel guilty about later, because you don't feel obligated to do things you don't want to do or see people you don't want to see. And you start to understand that no is a complete sentence.
Yeah, 100%. I think that was probably like, not drinking actually allowed me to practice. Like, it opened up the space for me to actually practice saying no and understanding that no is a complete sentence. Because I struggle with saying no in a lot of areas of my life, because I understand that I'm a people pleaser. But when I stopped drinking, that was a hard no for me. I almost saw that I could say it. I could move through that uncomfortable experience. I could move through the weird glares and stares that I would probably get. Because I want to be honest, there have been moments where I've said, oh, I'm sober, and, or, oh, I'm not going to be drinking today. And they're like, what happened? And I'm like, who the fuck are you to think you can ask me that question? But like, really, in reality, most of the time I'm an open book and I just talk about my story. And my story, it doesn't have to, like, stories don't have to come with magnitude. It's not like, oh my God, I found myself one day under a bridge and I basically lost my house. And you don't have to have that. Like, some of these stories, I know, I'm sorry, I'm a rad storyteller over here and I go on tangents, but sometimes this, your story can be just like, I actually craved health. I craved to understand myself and a healthier version of myself. And that is part of my story too. Like, I wanted to understand myself in a healthier version of me. Like, I wanted to strip myself of all the things that I thought and I believed were maybe they erred on the unhealthier side. And I said, I want to know and I want to experience myself the healthiest that I can be. And so I made that decision. So not every story comes with this grand, like, I hit rock bottom and now I'm climbing up. And I think we have to get away from that. Like, sobriety doesn't mean that you had a story of unwellness or whatever the word is. Maybe I just made one up, but like one that speaks to like something where you struggled with. Sometimes it can just be you choosing yourself and a healthier version of yourself. And at times when somebody gives me that sort of glare or stare or confused look where they're like, oh, but you drank before. And I remember that you drank before. I remember giving you a shot and you taking it really easily. And I'm like, yeah, I could probably still do that, but I choose not to do that. That's a choice that I'm making. It's a conscious one that I'm doing for the person that I am right now. And I think that is, if you get those stares and you get those glares, I think it is okay to say, and follow it up with, I'm doing it for the person that I am right now and for the healthier version. I'm trying to live a life that's, you know, healthier for me. That's my definition of health. Again, everybody has a different definition, but sometimes when I do get those stares, I follow it up with that because most people will not immediately challenge how it is that you pursue your health and wellness. People usually will stand back and allow you to exist in that space. And so I do get that sort of question. I say it's in pursuit of my best health and my you know, best form of wellness, whatever it is that you want to say.
Absolutely. And you just have to remind yourself, even if you don't say it out loud, that the sober curious movement itself is so new. This idea that not drinking is becoming so normalized is so new. And so I guarantee in 5 to 10 years, it is absolutely not going to be something people ask. It's going to be very normalized. But in the meantime, you have to remind yourself you're in the early stages, right? Like I'm trying to think of that word. It's when you're somebody
trendsetter,
like an early adopter.
Okay. I get what you're saying. You're an early adopter.
You know, you're part of this revolution that's like happening before you're getting sober and you're not drinking before it's cool to do that, which it's becoming cool to do that. It's becoming cool to not get wasted and to be present and to care about your mental health, which is so rad. But
yeah, it is.
In all honesty, it is rad.
Yeah,
it is. I have to remind myself when I'm like romanticizing or even like we had said the other day, I had started following a couple people from my LA days who I went to rehab with and they're not sober anymore. And it doesn't look like they're struggling or anything. They've just decided to keep drinking. And I got that ping of almost jealousy a little bit, like, oh, we're all young and they got over it or whatever. Or maybe they didn't. I'm just judging solely off of Instagram. And I'm like, and I'm over here and my whole life revolves around sobriety, supposedly, like my podcast, my job, etc., which it's funny because like nothing else in my life does. But
you're more than just your sobriety.
Totally. Yeah. But from the outside, it seems like that. But I had to rein myself back in and also remind myself in that moment, yeah, you know what? Like, cool. But also like what I'm doing is cool because I'm going against the grain and I'm doing something that serves me, like you said, and that, okay, we're not going out and getting wasted or whatever, but the long-term benefits are just, and the short-term benefits, all the benefits of not drinking are just so, the list is so long compared to the benefits of drinking. Yeah. And so I have to just remind myself, you know what, just because this isn't, we're very counterculture right now, right? Like it's still not the mainstream to be sober, that one day we will be. And then I feel cool about it. And I'm not saying I'm going to be a judgmental Judy, but sometimes I am. And sometimes it helps me a little just be like, oh, you have to drink. Like, that sucks. I'm fine when I don't drink.
Yeah, I'm so cool when I don't drink.
Yeah, don't be an asshole. Cool? But like, it's okay to internally be a little bit of an asshole. And
yeah, keep that an inner experience, whatever keeps you on your journey. But I agree with you. Like, I think it's, I guess for me, I've always found that like living a unique lifestyle has always been really cool. I've gravitated toward that my whole life. Like people who were like black sheep, I'm always like, ooh, who are you? What are you doing? I like that. I like people who don't fit into the mold of things. But that is because that's a value of mine. And so you got to define your value system and your core values. And every time that you feel that sort of ping of romanticization of, oh, they're going out and they're going to brunch and they're clinking their mimosas, take a step back. Yeah, that might look really enticing from a picture or from whatever it is that you're imagining, which again, there's a aspect of grandeur to that as well. Whereas people, alcohol is a phenomenon in our culture. And so make sure that you are contextualizing that, but then take a step back and be like, would I be pursuing my value system if I were there with them? Probably not. Probably not. So what's more important, that how it looks that you're living your life or how you're actually living your life? I think that's a complete difference. And immediately when I bring it down to like basic terms like that, I'm like, oh, fuck no. Yeah, actions speak way more than how something just looks from the outside. Yeah, chase your values. Create that core system. I love values. Go do a values card sort. The therapist says go do it. That's your homework assignment.
In the episode description. But I feel like that's a good place to end it. And I really like that. Chase your values.
All right, that's time. We're at our end. Thank you guys for listening. If you're still here, be sure to follow us at Emotionally Immobile at our Instagram. The email for podcast questions is in the bio. So make sure to submit your cues down there. And as always, please like, comment, subscribe, all the good things. We'll see you next week.